What's going on, my youths? It's your boy, Bintu St. Jean, and I'm bringing to you another episode on the podcast titled The Truth for You. That's right, the podcast where we talk about real life issues concerning real young people as it is happening in real time and how we can bring real biblical and practical solutions to help our youths navigate these issues and propel themselves to be the best and live a purpose-filled life. Now, today's episode that we got is hot, and it's one that you don't want to miss. This topic today, we are going to be discussing the war on drugs. How did we as a nation get to where we are in this epidemic? And how can we help our young people navigate this drug-infested world? Well, this is what we're going to dive into and how we can help our young people and our society become a better place for our young people in the future now and for those to come. Man, I am excited about this. You don't want to miss this episode. Stay tuned. Drugs. What comes to your mind when you hear the word drugs? How do you feel? What are the emotions that come out of you when you think of that word? Is it jitterish? Does it make you feel anxious? Does it put you at ease? Does it make you angry? Or maybe you feel threatened, scared. Maybe there's some sort of memory or some kind of experience that you've seen or saw, or maybe something you yourself have gone through that comes back when you think of that word, drugs. Is it a happy thing? Is it a sad thing? Is it a good thing? Is it something worth talking about? Or is it something worth getting involved with? Well, no matter how you feel or how you see drugs, the reality is we got to deal with it. It's in our society. It's all over the world. And it's an issue that, unfortunately, as young people, we are faced with on a daily basis. When I think of drugs, I think of being a little kid. When I was in elementary school, I remember they used to tell us, "Now kids, class, I want you all to know that drugs are not good for you. Don't do drugs." Right? That's all I think about. When I think of drugs, what I think is, don't do it. But even as a kid and as a child and growing up, I've learned that saying don't do drugs doesn't do justice, because as we're going to see in the stats and statistics, a lot of people are doing drugs even though we shouldn't do it. But why is that? What's the crave behind that? How did we get here? Let's take a deeper look. Now, according to the CDC, well, for those who don't know, the CDC is the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Now, I got one question about that. Why isn't it called the Centers for Disease Cure and not Control? Why are we trying to control something when there's to be a cure for it? But that's a podcast for another episode. Right now, we're talking about drugs. And according to the CDC, the drug overdose epidemic continues to worsen in the United States, meaning that drug overdose is an epidemic. Now, we went through a pandemic, that's something that involves the whole world. But when we're talking about an epidemic, this is an issue that obviously affects a nation. But it even goes on to say, overdose deaths remain a leading cause of injury-related death in the United States. The majority of overdose deaths involve opioids. Deaths involved in synthetic opioids and stimulants have increased in recent years. In addition, overdose deaths accelerated during the COVID-19 pandemic. This crazy, y'all. This crazy. We are seeing that the epidemic of overdosing on drugs is an issue that skyrocketed even during the pandemic. How does an epidemic increase during a pandemic? Come on, man. Y'all know COVID-19. Now, of course, if you know during COVID-19, this was the time where we had to be quarantined, where the whole world was on pause, was on hold. Now, of course, living during that time, and of course, this was about, 3 years ago when the pandemic first happened, we didn't know what was going to happen in our world. We thought this was just something China had to deal with, but eventually this was something that the whole world had to deal with. And there was a sense of uncertainty, not knowing what the future was going to hold. Graduations were being postponed, kids weren't going to school, businesses were closed, arenas were closed, there were no sports, no entertainment, major venues and events were shut down. There was just this cloud of what is going on and what is going to happen. And the crazy thing is, nobody knew, not even Fauci, right? And because of this high stress, people were staying home. People were getting laid off. And as a result, you can think that a lot of people were having trouble coping with the pandemic. And because we were all having trouble coping with the pandemic, there was also an increase in mental health, anxieties, depression, and even suicide rates as well too. And of course, as you would imagine, as a coping mechanism, many people turned to drugs. Now let's look at the stone cold facts. The crack epidemic took an increasing spike in the 1980s. Now, it was popular because of its affordability, its immediate euphoric effect, and its high profitability. This made it highly popular in the black community. You know us black people. If it's cheap, we deep. It would cost from $5 to $20. This caused increase of addictions, deaths, and drug-related crimes. It gave an instantaneous high, an intense high, which kept people craving for more. Between 1982 and 1985, the number of cocaine users increased by 1.6 million. Crack was easy to make. You needed fewer resources, and it was very easy to sell. A small-time drug dealer selling crack daily could make as much as $2,000 a month. The business is very lucrative. That's a very attractive number. You telling me I can make at least $2,000 a month, work on my own hours, work at home, I don't need to go to a 4-year university with no work history, and y'all always hiring? Sounds like college ain't the only way. I was watching a documentary on the war on Cali and gangs, and a brother put it like this in an interview. He said, you could be the ugliest dude in the world with a second grade education, but if you have cocaine, oh, you the man. You are the man, because cocaine is power. But that's a scripture, and I quote from Proverbs 28, verse 20. A faithful man will abound with blessings, but whosoever hastens to be rich will not go unpunished. Let's just say that the president at the time took this proverb to heart and made it the hallmark of his presidency to interfere with this business and let no deeds go unpunished. That's right. President Ronald Reagan, the 40th president of the free world, was in power at that time from 1981 to 1989. Well, I like to call him President Ray Ray. As you can imagine, President Ray Ray promised to fight and put an end to this war on drugs. And he delivered on that promise on his terms. The war on drugs was based and grounded on the deterrence theory. This is a theory that the implementation of legislation and harsher penalties would deter or discourage the use of drugs, which is just genius. That's like saying, yo, if we use more rat traps, that would keep more rats from wanting more cheese. Or setting mouse traps everywhere in the house, but yet you leave food on the table overnight. So as a result of these drug fighting efforts, the U.S. began the passing of anti-federal drug laws. You had the increase of anti-drug funding. You had the initiation and expansion of police and prison programs. You had the DEA. Man, Reagan was so serious about this that the minimal penalty for possession of 5 grams of crack would be 5 years. Thanks to President Ray, the war on drugs resulted in a huge growth in court caseloads, and the prison population expeditiously grew. I don't even know what that word means. But the war on drugs targeted the small-time drug dealers, you know, Antonio Del on the block, who were generally poor black men from the inner city. They were targeting the brothers. As a result, the prison population, as you can imagine, doubled. 1 in every 4 African-American male aged 20 to 29 was either incarcerated, in prison, or in parole by 1989, the end of Reagan's term. So if you are wondering why black people are the minority in the states, but the majority in the prison system, thank President Ray, in love and memory. This led the U.S. to be the leading nation in all of the world with the highest incarceration rate, even to this date in 2023. I mean, it only got worse from President Ray. The Clinton administration took the same approach. Now, I'm not going to play devil advocate. As bad and as ridiculous as the U.S. approach to tackling the war on drugs sounds, or is, rather I should say, it's nowhere near as close to how it was being handled by the president of the Philippines. Yeah. President Rodrigo Duterte. He was president from 2016 to 2022. He was the 16th president of the Philippines. Duterte, like President Ray, made cracking down on drugs the centerpiece of his presidency. This man on his campaign promised not only to end the war on drugs, but that he would kill drug dealers. Literally on his campaign, he said, man, to all of you drug dealers that are out there, those of you that are selling drugs, those of you that are terrorizing our streets, I'm coming out to get you. Man, you better not let me catch you on the streets. If I find you on the streets, I'm going to kill you. I'm not going to throw you in jail. We ain't going to put you in handcuffs. I'm going to kill you. And as you can imagine, unlike many presidents, he delivered on his promises. According to police reports, there have been nearly 6,000 killings of drug suspects since he took office in 2016. But even those numbers, as crazy as it sounds, were suspected to be underreported. It was so bad, the United Nations and the United States united to step in to raise an alarm over the killings. He was so mad by this, he told the president at the time, President Barack Obama, to go to hell. He was so hard on criminals that he's being charged as a criminal for the deaths involved in the drug crackdowns. And this is what he says. He says he takes full responsibility and find it an honor to go to jail. Yeah, the place where he was supposed to send drug offenders, not the cemetery. This man is like the Batman of the Philippines. Only difference is he kills them instead of beating them up. Which brings me to another proverb. Proverbs 29, verse 2. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked are in power, the people groan. Well, this goes to show the drug epidemic isn't just nationwide. this isn't just a U.S. problem. It's worldwide. Yep, the top five countries affected the most by drugs is Iran, ironically, Afghanistan, Russia, the United States, and Great Britain. So my question is, why are people still doing it? Now, in order for us to understand why we are addicted to drugs, we must first understand the definition of drugs. Now, according to Merriam-Webster Dictionary, a drug is something and often an illegal substance that causes addiction, habituation, or a marked change in consciousness. By this definition, the first drug was not cartelled in the 1960s, but rather it was sitting right in the middle of the Garden of Eden in the beginning. That's right. The fruit Adam and Eve were forbidden by God to eat was a drug. The fruit was forbidden, which means it was illegal. And who pushed this drug to them? It was the serpent. Who was the serpent? It was Satan. For it was the woman who was beguiled by the serpent, or who was beguiled by Satan. In other words, Satan was the first dope dealer. Satan was trapping in the garden, y'all. Satan promised that if Eve ate the fruit, she would be like God, knowing good and evil. Or in other words, she would reach a new high in a level of consciousness, or a marked change in consciousness. That's exactly what happened. After our first parents ate the fruit, they began to experience paranoia. They began to worry. They began to see themselves in the world differently. Their behavior changed. Their faces changed. They began to age. They began to fear and hallucinate. They thought God was going to kill them. God told Eve that the day she eat the fruit, she would surely die. Not that he would surely kill them. Adam and Eve were drug addicts. They were the first drug addicts. That's crazy. Our first parents were drug addicts. That is why God had to put a flaming sword between them and the tree, because they would have gone back for some more. Instead, they became addicted to sin, and so did the rest of humanity. They were addicted to sin like all of us. Now, the Apostle Paul got something to weigh in on this in Romans 7, verse 19 to 25, that gives us a clear picture. For the good that I would do not, but the evil which I would not, that I do. Now, if I do that I would do not, it is no more I that do it, but sin that does. Basically, information is not enough for us to make the right choice. We know smoking kills. We know alcohol is bad for the heart. We know drugs are bad. Don't do it. But we still do it. Information is not enough for us or to keep us from making the wrong decisions or wrong choices. And because this issue goes beyond information, it only means one thing, y'all. It's spiritual. The penalties are harsh. The risk seems to far outweigh the reward. And the Batman is out to get you. But somehow the business is still booming, which means people are still using, buying, and abusing. The drug epidemic was so bad in the beginning that the 1980 Lakers made a check on it. Let's just say those brothers should stick to basketball. And I'm glad that they did. But nonetheless, athletes like Michael Jordan would say, "Don't do drugs." During a commercial, programs like there would show up in schools to educate kids on these matters. But not even Michael Jordan or any efforts could end this war. There are plenty of drugs besides cocaine, for the record. There are opioids, you got pain medication, you have expired prescription drugs, parents leaves in the cabinet that somehow children's fine, and overdosing. You have heroin. You can inhale it, you can smoke it, you can eat it. There are plenty of reasons how and why people would turn to drugs. It could be physical, or it could be psychological, to where people experience withdrawals when they no longer have drugs. People experience dramatic weight loss, sweating, and all of these nerve-wracking experiences. It comes in many different forms, colors, but it all has the same effect.
It ruins your life. So we have a problem. We have an issue. What's the solution? Well, this brings us to my theory. Ben's theory. Here's my theory. Because the reason why people use drugs are so diverse and that there are so many ways to access it, you have to approach it case by case. A one-size-fits-all approach like the deterrence theory won't work. Sorry, Ray Ray. And Rodrigo, you need help. You don't end the war on drugs by getting criminals off the street. You end it by getting criminals off of drugs. A president finally realized that. President Obama acknowledged the mistake of the president of the previous presidents on their approach to this issue. He says that, look, this solution is not just by incarcerating these criminals or incarcerating these drug offenders, because at the end of the day, they're still on drugs. So we have to realize that the real war is not on drugs. The real war is in the mind. You have to reach the mind before you reach the addiction. Jesus did it this way. He would ask the patients before he heals them, would you like to be made whole? Would you like to be healed? Do you realize the condition that you are in? Do you see what it is doing to you and your family? Do you acknowledge that you have a problem? If so, do you wish to be free? Okay, well, I'm going to need you to do this. Instead of just throwing drug offenders and abusers in jail, get them treatment. There is a psychological dependence on the drugs. You can't reverse the psychological dependence by force. They need to be educated. They need a mental and physical detox. They are not crooks. They are victims and patients of a deadly substance. Drug addiction is an illness, not just a criminal offense. You can't handle this situation from a merely legal standpoint. The police cannot end the war on drugs. You need the psychologists. You need the psychiatrists. You need the behavioral health specialists to pay routine visits in these prisons and assign these drug abusers case managers to help them. These people need help. If you can get them off of drugs, you don't have to worry about them being on the streets. Now, as far as the drug dealers on the business side, keep in mind, most of these offenders range, and we're talking about the small-time drug dealers, range from the ages of 20 to 29. And remember, a lot of these brothers are from the poor and underprivileged communities. So what would be the solution to them? Get them a job. Give them opportunities. Help them to find other ways of making money besides selling drugs. These prisons should have a plumber, electricians, carpenters, AC workers. Pay these young men a visit and get them interested in learning trades so that when they get out of jail, they're not going back to nothing. Right? Because corporate America ain't going to take them. Once you have a criminal record, these companies are not going to take you in. Once they see that you have a felony or a drug charge, they're not going to hire you. You're not going to get a call back. So what needs to be done? I mean, think about it. It takes 1 to 2 years to learn a trade. With all that time these young men are spending in prisons, can you imagine how much things they can do if they learn a trade in jail? Or they can learn trades in jail. How useful and productive they can be coming back in society? Last but not least, what can you do? Educate yourself on this issue. This podcast episode was just an episode just to spark a conversation and hopefully an interest on this matter. Read articles. I've read plenty of articles in preparing this episode. Watch documentaries like on Netflix. Weigh in on the public discussion platforms addressing these issues. because lives are being affected. For crying out loud, families are being broken. Everyone is being affected from high to low. Obama once said that this drug epidemic has no respecters of person, right? It doesn't discriminate at all. It affects people from all backgrounds, from all walks of life, from the highest to low. Man, you watch the news. Even celebrities are not immune to this issue. We've lost Mac Miller. We've lost Whitney Houston. We've lost Michael Jackson. Most recently, Ricky Smiley lost his son. Master P lost his daughter. Nick Carter from the Backstreet Boys. Ain't nothing but a party. Tell me why. Lost his brother, Aaron Carter, to this fight. And I'm sure you may have known someone close that is either fighting or have lost in this war on drugs. I'm here to tell you to keep learning, keep researching, keep praying, keep fighting, keep raising awareness, because this war is far from over, but we all have a part to play in. Find that part and play your role. Okay, so we already know the issue of drugs and that it's highly addictive. But how do we recover? How do we process the recovery stage? Well, I went on this website called Recovery at the Crossroads Treatment Center website, and they listed 5 stages of change when it comes to recovery. And I think this is the key, y'all, to get over any addiction. Now, I want to say this. This is not just a stage that can be applied to drugs, but this goes for any addiction. That goes for pornography, that goes for alcohol, that goes for sex, that goes for anything that is harmful to you, your body, your life, and putting either you or your family in danger. These stages can be applied. Now, let's take a look into this. The first stage is pre-contemplation stage. Now, in this stage, people who are in this stage aren't ready for any addiction treatment program yet. They're just not ready yet. They haven't contemplated the idea of them recovering from drugs. And so in this stage, they are defensive and are always justifying their behavior. They're saying, man, what is you talking about, man? I don't need any help, man. I'm good. I'm fine. I'm good where I'm at, bro. I'm straight. Bro, I'm good. I'm straight where I'm at. Just like the scripture says, every man is justified in his own eyes. Proverbs 21, verse 2. It doesn't matter how many times you try to bring it up to them, they avoid the conversation, they avoid accountability for their actions, and they don't see the harm of what they are doing, whether it's drugs or alcohol, but rather they place emphasis on the positive effects they experience from their use of drugs. Like, hey, yo, this thing makes me happy, bro. You know, sometimes I get stressed, but when I smoke, when I drink, you know, it makes me feel good. It helps me to get away from all the chaos. They're always emphasizing the pros over the cons. And therefore, there is a lack of information. There are failed attempts to recover. And also in this stage, there is not enough confidence that recovery is even possible. It's not even something in their sight. It's far in their minds. But then we got the second stage. This is the contemplation stage. Now, at this stage, the person is ready to make a change in the future, but not immediately, right? It's basically like someone about to jump off the plane. So, you know, you're on the plane and you're out there and you got the whole drilling in and the fear and you know you have to jump. You know you have to get over, but you're just not ready yet. Like, yo, I'm going to jump off the plane. Just don't push me, okay? I'm going to jump when I am ready. Back off me. Don't push me. I'll do it when it is time, right? They are aware, unlike the previous stage, of the pros of becoming drug-free. So they understand the positive effects that it will have on them and the positive impact it will have in their life. But at the same time,
they are still aware of the benefits they perceive from alcohol or drug addiction. Like, I know I shouldn't be doing this, but I need to feel good. I can't get over this emotions, or I can't get over what is going on in my life. I need this right now, right? But even at this stage, they are still more likely to reason and listen. Just like what the scripture says in Isaiah, God says, come and reason with me. Though your sins are red as scarlet, I will make them white as snow, right? Red as crimson. And so they're ready to listen. So by avoiding blame, judgment, and accusations, it's possible to help them get to the next stage. Look, peep Proverbs 9 verse 8. It says, rebuke a wise man and he will love you. Rebuke a scorner and he will hate you. This person is ready to hear information in regards to being recovered from where they are. Now, the next stage is the preparation stage. Now, at this stage, there is a sense of urgency for their desire for sobriety, right? So there's a desire to be sober, a desire to be free, a desire to live a drug-free or alcohol-free or whatever free life. So they made some actions, joining the gym, probably YouFit, Planet Fitness. They're seeing a counselor or attempting to quit by themselves. Now, it's common for people to go a day or two without turning to drug or alcohol abuse, but jump right back to the previous stages. As soon as something starts happening in their lives, negative emotions arise that they can't control, they obviously run back to that as a coping skill and coping mechanism. Like the good word says again, in Proverbs 26 verse 11, a dog runs back to its vomit. It's common, right? Kind of like a young lady who's in love with a brother. Even though she knows that the relationship is toxic, even though he's cheating on her, even though he's abusing her physically or emotionally, even after the breakup, she still takes him back, right? So that's what the stage is. You know that the drug is wrong. You know that it's a difficult thing that you have to get over. But when things get rough, you run right back to it. Which brings us to our fourth stage, which is the action stage. This means that the person has made significant changes in their lives and is committed to change. So they're actually putting in the effort, they're putting in the work. There are prolonged periods of abstinence and the inclination to turn to professionals for help before or after relapse. Self-care and understanding is present. Self-care is a big one, but counseling is required to keep them on the right path. Like the good word says, in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. What is also the point about this stage is as well is that the person is also has a change of scenery or a change of environment. Which brings us to our next stage, which is the maintenance stage. Now, in this stage, the individual is working hard to prevent the addiction recovery relapse. They're keeping lifestyle changes made, exercise, recreational activities, staying sober, paying attention to hygiene. They don't feel the urge to relapse. Their confidence grows and they truly believe in their ability to maintain sobriety long term. And this lasts from 6 months to 5 years, which brings us to another good word. He that endures, the same shall be saved. My brothers and sisters, I want to let you know that no matter what your addiction is, whether it is drugs, alcohol, sin, pornography, whether it's lying, whether it's cheating, whether it's running away from something that you've done, I want you to know that there is freedom out there. Scripture says that who the Son sets free is free indeed. I want you to realize that as you look at your life, whether it has been broken by an addiction or whether it is being ruined by addiction, I want you to know that there's hope. There's a possibility. We can all get through this. The war on drugs is the war on the mind. The war on drugs is the war on youth. The war on drugs is a spiritual war. It is beyond our power. It is beyond our human faculties. It is beyond every human invention and resource. We must connect ourselves to a higher power to get over this high. And let me tell you something. The moment you connect yourself with God, He will give you the victory in every battlefield. Stay blessed, my youths. Alright, we have officially come to the end of this podcast episode. I want to say thank you for listening. I hope you learned something that you can apply to yourself today and also help with others as well too, as you seek to grow and mature in the wisdom and the strength of the Lord. This has been Tu St. Jean, and you're listening to the True for Youth podcast. If you can, please do me a favor and subscribe, because we got some more fire coming. Thank you, and be blessed, my youths. Until next time. Bye.